This is Radio Influence.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Everybody, hey, welcome to Crush Performance. We're rolling right along with the Low Tide Crush opening day baseball extravaganza. Thanks for joining us, and if you've been listening, thanks for sticking around. I am sitting in the studio with one of my favorite baseball buddies, Low Tide, and just a great story about Jim Fanning in that last segment. Al, thanks for that. He was truly a great Canadian in baseball.
Yeah, he was, and revered, as you say, still in the business. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So today, we are going to continue with this baseball coverage as opening day is underway. I'm going to share a story here right away, but we do have a text Twitter question of the day. Text us 101260. It's the Crush question of the day.
I have a question for you right now if you want it.
Yeah, go for it.
Ask Rochelle which team's pitching staff has the best chance to throw the season's first no-no.
Oh, good question. Very good question.
I don't know either. I would say the Dodgers, but Kershaw's already thrown.
Yeah. I'm trying to think where around in the... I'll have to say, if we look at the top rotations in the league right now, I would have to say, boy, Astros are right up there, yeah. But your Nationals are top to bottom. I think Scherzer's. The Nationals might have the top rotation in the league. So I'm going to go with the Nationals. I think the Nationals might have the potential to throw the first no-no simply because of their depth.
And Scherzer might be the first guy to walk off the mound and kill a pit batter.
Does that sound right, though?
Yeah.
If we look at the...
it does. I the other one, you always think about, like, the Red Sox, if they're lefty, can, because it's going to be a one-off, right? Like, it's going to be a guy who's just on one day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's no Nolan Ryans left, so it's a little sporadic.
And as special as those no-hitters have been in the past, I think, Al, they're going to gain a glare of special as we move forward, simply because of some of the statistics we're seeing in terms of complete games and the use of the bullpens now. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like 20 games. That's an impossible milestone.
Yeah. So the text question of the day, get to us anytime. What for you is the top storyline to follow in baseball in 2018? It could be a player. It could be a team. It could be a storyline. We've talked about, Al, the balls. Are they juiced? We've talked about the home runs. We've talked about the strikeouts. We've talked about the use of analytics. Ohtani, we've talked about. There's so many great storylines out.
It's opening day is a great time because everybody, even if your team is garbage, you still feel like they have a chance to do something at least. What I find interesting this year, the story that I'm following is how many teams win 100 or more, how many teams lose 100 or more. I think the gap is widening.
Yeah, and that'll take us right into our talk about the top teams to watch this year. But before we get there, you told a story.
Yes, I'm looking forward to your story.
I'm going to tell a story. There's so many to tell, and I think maybe there's a couple here that we'll get to. But this is a story from the trenches, okay? And I don't know if I've told you this one before, and I hope I haven't, because I just want people to maybe get a feel for what this game is all about from the fans and the players. So the players, they're just a bunch of guys that are really, really good at something, right? And I've been lucky enough to be at the big league level with these guys. And they're tremendous, tremendous people for the most part. You know, they're locked in, they're under the pressure of the spotlight, and they have to deal with pressures that the normal person doesn't. But they're good guys. One day, we're at home playing the Yankees. Homer Bush is our second baseman, right? And he's struggling. His hip is starting to fail him, and that's what took him away from baseball eventually. And we'd been working on it for 2 years, trying to really get some special things done, because he came to us from the Yankees after that all-star season. Oh, my gosh. And he had his World Series ring, so... Homer Bush was a really special player. And we're warming up one day. It's midseason, and we're on the sideline before the game. The guys are all getting ready. Delgado's there. Cruz Jr. was there. Tony Batista. I can't remember who else, but we're all in the pregame. And the anthems are just getting ready to go, so we're lining up. And, there's this young kid from the stands just, Homer, 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 Homer. Hey, Homer. Hey, Homer. And we're out there, just the guys are trying to get locked in, right? And understand, it's not that they don't want to sign. These guys sign autographs.
Yes.
It's not that they don't, but there's a time they like to get their minds into the game. And Homer was one of those guys for sure. And this young kid, Homer, Homer, Homer. And we're lining up just before the anthems. And the announcer's coming on, ladies and gentlemen, please stand for the national anthems. And we're taking our hats off. And this young, he didn't stop. And Homer's standing right beside him. He goes, hey, Jeff. He goes, Crush, could you just go, hey, tell that kid, just, I'll talk to him after the game, or just tell him, see what's going on. I said, I'll get him right after the anthem. So I turn around, I look the little guy in the eye, and he's like 10 or 11 years old. He's full on gear, top to bottom. And so I look at him, I just put my finger, shh, okay, just wait 1 second, right? Yeah. And he waves, he said, okay, okay. And as soon as the anthems are over, Homer, Homer, Homer. And I'm not joking, as soon as everybody's clapping, he's Homer. Boom, and they start, the guys are running again. So I jog over to this young guy. I said, hey, what's up? He goes, listen, I got to talk to Homer. Well, tell me. I said, Homer's really getting ready for the game right now. What's wrong? He says, look, I've got a pair of batting gloves for Homer. I'm going, well, what do you mean? He says, well, last year when Homer was really doing well, he gave me these batting gloves, and I want to get him back because hopefully he can start hitting again if I give him these gloves back. Oh my gosh, listen to me. There's no crying in baseball.
Oh my God.
I'm not telling you, man. I walk up to the line there. The guys are stretching. I go home. I said, Homer, I think you might want to go see this young guy. And he goes, why, what's up? And I'm all teary-eyed. I'm going, oh, you're not going to believe it. So Homer runs over there and talks to him and takes the gloves, runs to the dugout, grabs a bat, a game bat,
yeah,
and runs back, gives the beautiful young player a game bat. But I tell you what,
story.
Oh my gosh, we're standing at the line and I'm got tears welling up my eyes. Like, this is what the game is all
yes.
about.
Yeah. That's my new favorite Crush story.
The year before, Homer was raking. And I think he went to the All-Star game and he was signing autographs and gave this young guy with a Homer Bush, gave him his batting gloves, game used batting gloves. A year later, Homer's struggling. And this young guy, Homer, Homer, Homer.
Love it.
Oh my gosh. And I'll never forget it.
That replaces my previous favorite Jeff Christel story, which was Raul Mondesi never being ready for the workouts in time.
That's a story for another day, yes, for sure. But it's a good one too. That's a doozy.
Oh yeah. That's a
doozy,
classic.
For sure. But hey, one other story I want to get to, Al, in this first segment, as we're talking about great stories, is of course, Roy Halladay. The Blue Jays just did a first class job of retiring his number, an opening day in Toronto. Brandy and the boys were both there, but a few weeks earlier, his son Brandon was pitching for the Canadian Junior National Team. Of course, born in Toronto, he has a Canadian passport and is eligible for the Canadian Junior National Team. He wound up pitching against the Blue Jays big league team.
Wow.
At spring training for Team Canada, the Junior National Team. What a special, special event. I saw him pitch. I saw Brandon pitch. And again, I couldn't help but getting welled up and a little overclamped for sure. It was really, really special to watch.
It was the Jays are a class organization, but they handled that ceremony so well. And the most difficult moment was when the kids walk up and they just put the baseball on the mound.
Yeah.
And I mean, the impact that he had obviously on that organization was great. The tragedy is massive and you know, it's almost like something you get through, but I thought that moment was so beautiful.
It was. And I think it was good for baseball. It was certainly good for the Blue Jay and Phillies fans. Anybody who was really passionate about the game and followed Roy, really, really special. And he was one of the players, Al, that really did recalibrate pitching in the game of baseball. He was sort of coming off. He was a young player coming up behind Clemens and Henkin, back-to-back Cy Youngs. And at that time, I think you'd be hard pressed to find pitchers that trained and prepared themselves the way they did for baseball. Carpenter and Halladay were coming up in tandem right behind those two great mentors. And that's exactly what happened. Roy came in, was mentored, went down, rebuilt himself with Mel Queen and the Blue Jays staff, came up to the big leagues again and had it figured out.
Yeah. And it's the investment, that's what we're talking about in the previous hour about young talent, about, you know, teams have to decide if they're going to chase the free agents. Maybe they're close enough that makes sense, or they're going to go develop the talent. And sometimes that means sending a guy back and then recalibrating, as you say, making sure that you get the optimal out of a player for your organization as well. And in the case of the Jays, when they were really, really going well, and they will again, it comes down to how many arms do you have in the business? Because if you've got two or three guys coming up, they have the hitters, got to have those pitchers too, because you need them.
Well, let's talk about this, Al, with a few minutes left here in this first segment, teams to watch now. teams to watch. And I guess right along with teams to watch, we have to talk about their farm systems as well. So if you're going to watch a team, and I'm not talking about picking our World Series champions here, let's just say which teams are you intrigued by this year?
There's two, and they're both in the National League, and they're both the teams that I've sworn at in the past. But I think the Atlanta Braves have a really nice group of young players, and they're a little late, and maybe they're a little earlier, maybe they're just on time. But I think this team could spike. They've got some good players. Some are bubbling under. They're maybe their franchise leader. Their big outfielder, the 20-year-old is Acuna, is not there yet, but it's close. And when they get there, the Braves are going to be a fun team once again to watch. And it's been a while. It's been a little while, but I think the Braves are a team to watch this year. And I also think the Phillies, very interested in their new manager, very interested in that young team. I think they're doing a lot of things right. Those two teams, the Phillies and the Braves, I think maybe not this year. Maybe they're going to win 75 games instead of 85. But I think they're close.
Yeah, and I'm interested that you mentioned the Phillies, because I was trying to catch my sleeper for this year. 2 years ago, Cleveland wasn't on my radar, and they went on to do something incredibly special, and I felt beaten because they weren't even on my radar at the start. Last year, the Brewers, with one of the lowest payrolls, why would they be on my radar? And of course, at the All-Star break last year, they were six games up and they finished just out of contention. But what a special run by the Brewers last year. And I'm trying to figure out, okay, I refuse to be tricked up again this year. And the Phillies are right there on my radar for one of those sleeper teams. So I'm interested that you say that. They also have a pretty good farm system.
Yeah, they do. And you need that, because arms are going to fall off and guys are going to get hurt. But they're an interesting team.
Yeah, my number one team to watch this year. My number one team to watch, and this isn't a pick by any means, but for a number of reasons, could the Yankees be the true triple threat this year out of nowhere? And you love to hate the Yankees, especially as a Blue Jay fan, for sure. But with their starting rotation, which is not the best in the league, but it's top 10 for sure. Their lineup, which is probably the best in the league.
Yes.
And their bullpen, which is you got to admit, is in the argument for one of the best in leagues. They have a triple threat that I think is going to be really, really tough to beat. If they stay healthy and execute, Al, I'm telling you, this is going to be something to watch.
Well, we're seeing it right now. They're 3-3 after seven against the Jays. And now you're into your bullpen. And there have been times in the past, the Yankees are a funny organization, and they have produced, in my lifetime, some of the most dominant teams in the game's history. And it all seems to have, like, the power seems to come easily to them. They can grab it either by free agency or by developing it. But oftentimes with the Yankees, the pitching is the question mark. And I like their starting rotation. I think it could use one more really, really good arm.
Yeah.
But if their starters can be 3-3 after seven often, then I think this team is going to win, you know, maybe not 110 games, but over 100.
So you're sitting with Brian Cashman in the executive suite watching.
Is he
this
buying?
Yeah, listen, and you're looking good going into the deadline,
right?
I guarantee right now they have a list of pitchers they want.
Yes.
And they're watching and praying that these teams are sellers at the deadline, because they're going to fill those holes.
Yeah. And if they do, then you're looking at look out Houston and look out Dodgers and look out everybody else.
Brian Cashman, there's another guy we could have an entire show on. Such a special person in baseball. Of course, he's had the payroll to back it up, but he has done some really, really good things with that payroll.
And you can make a list of Major League Baseball general managers who had the payroll and didn't get anything
Amen.
Done.
Amen. Yeah. Absolutely. And now they're coming almost out of obscurity here. They're two or three years ahead, I think, of their rebuild. And they've just topped it off this year to be a powerhouse. Ah, the Yankees.
Well, Derek Jeter. What are you? Well, you know, he's like persona non grata in Major League Baseball.
So Miami is another team of mine to watch.
Yes.
I'd like to talk to you about this for very, very opposite reasons. The yard sale that they had. And what is Derek trying to do? Is this a long-term overhaul? I mean, is he trying to get things under control and build his own team? Or is this just absolute...
The
craziness.
The Marlins have gone scorched earth in the past and then come back and won World Series on it. They've done that a couple of times where they get rid of all of their expensive players and then develop young. I watched them the other day. One thing I will say is that I don't know if they're great ball players, but they got tremendous athletes on that team.
Yeah.
And I don't know. You know, there's a difference between being a great athlete and being a great baseball player, because there's some real unique things about baseball, hitting a curveball, that sort of thing. But the Marlins are... They've done it in the past, so maybe they're following that model. It looks weird at the beginning.
Oh, the Marlin fans. The Marlin faithful, as few and far-fetched as they are,
yeah.
I feel for them.
Oh, man. And it's going to be tough to watch because you're assuming they're going to lose 100 games.
Yeah.
And that's hard to watch.
Yep, I think so. All right, hey, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk super teams. We got to talk payrolls, Al. And I also want to get your impressions of the new pace of play rules on Crush Performance on the Low Tide Crush Baseball Opening Day Extravaganza right after this.
Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Kershaw, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Crush Performance. It is our Low Tide Crush opening day baseball extravaganza. We're running through the season, the top storylines, the players, teams to watch. And in next segment, we'll be picking our World Series champion selections. I wonder how Al's choice is going to fare compared to ours. We'll find out. So, Al, in this segment, we wanted to talk about some of the super teams,
right?
Because there are teams who have poised themselves to attack the postseason here. And then there's a group of teams who seem to be sort of laying back, not spending. I think this sort of spurred on a lot of the controversy this offseason with the Players Association in relationship to the signing of free agencies and the spending of the revenue shares.
It's tough because if you're so far behind, and a lot of these teams are, they're long gone. They're the AL East, we've been talking about quite a bit today. There are teams in that division who have really no chance. I think the Jays do have a chance to be like the second wild card if they can get the 85, 86 wins, maybe. At least it's something they can tell themselves heading into the season. But if you're one of the bottom feeder teams, do you spend money on a number two, number three starter? Do you overpay him in terms of contract length and amount? Or do you try to spend that money developing a player who 2 years from now might help you and less expensively,
which is a legitimate way to go?
Yes.
So the word tanking has sort of been floating around this offseason. I don't like it at all. No. but if it's true, I think they got to come up with some sort of a way to make sure that doesn't happen. So the list right now of teams who appear to be going for it, again, I'm going really quickly here, but Arizona, Baltimore, Boston, Chicago, Cleveland for sure. The Colorado Rockies, yeah, is an interesting one for me. I don't know much about them. I never have, but they're a team who's always right there. Houston, of course, is going for it. The Angels, Dodgers, Brewers have spent more money than they've spent in the history of the offseason, and they actually outspent the Yankees and the Dodgers,
wow,
this offseason, which, amazing, is uncharacteristic. The Twins, Mets, Yankees, of course, Giants, Mariners, Cardinals, Rangers, Blue Jays. So over half of the league seems to be at least making some moves to be competitive. And that's great for those fan bases. Of the list here that I put together that really haven't made any major moves on the free agency market or on their 25-man major league rosters, we have the Braves, who we know are rebuilding. So that's, yeah, okay. They're doing some
and they're doing things. It right.
They're doing, yeah, it right for sure. Chicago White Sox have been quiet. The Reds have been very quiet. Detroit, we know, is in a total rebuild. Kansas City Royals have been quiet, and I'm surprised by that. We know the Marlins, Oakland Athletics have been under scrutiny for years with their lack of spending and their low payroll. Phillies, Pirates, Padres, and Tampa Bay are the teams who have been fairly quiet. So, when we look at the teams who are going for it, I mean, it's tough to really lay down what the best approach for success is, but the idea of getting the number one pick and having priority signings for the international signing period is really, really dependent on how bad you're doing, not how good you're doing.
Sure. And it's the Nationals beat the Reds 13-7 today, and they're 2-0. Scherzer and then today's pitcher was Strasburg. They were thinking about signing Arrieta. They ended up not getting him. But that's a team that can add because you're sort of set up to try to win. If you're, you know, say the Braves, and let's say you go out and get that, maybe he doesn't even sign with you, but let's say you go out and get a pretty good starter, how does he really help you? You might put some more bums in the seats. You might win 78 games instead of 72 games, but you're treading water. You're porridge. You're never really going to get anywhere. And like, I think you can make an argument that some Major League Baseball teams are simply not able to afford this, and that's a concern. But if you're actively procuring young talent and trying to make your team better, like the Braves as an example, then I think that's defensible.
Yeah, I agree. And that's a very interesting perspective, because the money side is a big part of it, the revenues. Yeah. Everybody thinks, you know, this, though the league is doing quite well, probably breaking the $12 billion mark in revenues this year, jumping maybe slightly ahead of the NFL, and it's only getting better for them. Some of these teams aren't in great markets in terms of television revenues or in terms of attendance as well. So that's a consideration. I do appreciate your focus on the 100 wins, though. I think it's really important. Last year, the Dodgers, Indians, and Astros are the three teams that won 100 games, right, I believe?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
And that's the first time since the Braves, Yankees, and Giants did it in 2003. Your Nationals won 97 last year, the Red Sox 93, the Cubs won 92, and the Yankees won 91 games when they acquired Stanton here, the outlook. So I think this 100-game mark, Al, might be sort of a standard to watch teams by this year. So I really like it.
Well, and see, when I came into baseball, the San Diego Padres and the Montreal Expos and the Seattle Pilots were winning 52 games and losing 110. And let me tell you, that's bad baseball. It's really tough to watch. And I think that there's, you know, you want to have some kind of balance, you know, like you want some equality in baseball or in any sport, because if it gets too bad to watch, people won't.
Right. So they don't have a salary cap. They have a rough, well, I'm not even sure what they're calling it now. They changed the name.
A luxury tax
threshold, right? They have a threshold.
Yeah.
But they also don't have a basement, not a hard basement anyway. And and there's lots of talk now about raising that minimum expenditure. I think the lowest payroll this year is just about $65 million. I think it's the A's this year, $65 million. We'll double check that number.
And the
for
A's
sure.
are an interesting team, too.
A's could be an interesting team. And now, especially, Al, here we open up another conversation, too. The A's and the Rays were the two really sort of big thorns in the commissioner's side because of their stadium issues.
Yes.
The Raiders are gone. The A's are now not going to move. They're going to refurbish that stadium so they don't have to share it with football. Now they're going to make it a legitimate baseball stadium right there.
Well, they should make it so that there could be more foul balls caught while in play. Right. There's not enough room.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's going to be interesting. They have six renderings for the new stadium for the refurbishment of that stadium. So the A's are all set now. They can actually build with confidence moving forward because they're not going to get moved. At least it doesn't look like it.
And there's a lot of history there.
There is.
That's why they should, you know, you've got the early 70s A's, they've got beautiful uniforms. I know that doesn't count for everything, but they're established. There's a lot to like about that in terms of marketing and branding.
Yeah, absolutely. And what a market. Why would teams ever leave that market? Do your job and appeal to the people there. There's such a great market there for sure.
One thing I do think that they should eventually think about: Houston and the Rangers are in the same league now, and maybe they should one day think about having San Francisco and the A's in the same.
Ooh.
You know, just because I think that the rivalry, right?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. And that would be a great rivalry, wouldn't it? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, we're going to Tampa. It sounds like it's set. They have the land. They also have renderings for their new stadium. It's on the Tampa side of the causeway now, away from St. Petersburg. So I think that bodes well for Tampa as well. Now, with those two teams taken care of, the commissioner's next big move is expansion, Al. And I know.
Oh, where would he go?
Yes, where would you go? We know Mexico is a top priority, and there will be big league games in Mexico over the next couple of years. Development and a focus on grassroots development in baseball in Mexico is a top priority. And then, of course, there's Montreal, Al,
which would be dynamite. Because this is a subject that is close to my heart, and they put 25,000 in two nights there, and the park looked good to me, but that's fine. Because when Montreal left, when they ended up playing, they were a road team for a year, basically. I think a lot of people got the wrong idea about Montreal as a baseball market, and they might have to overcome that, because I think it's a very good baseball market. They're not going to watch bad baseball. Nobody does. But I think that that's a market that they could probably put in and do well in. But I don't know if Major League Baseball is convinced of it.
Right. Well, I can tell you this. There's been a ownership group that has submitted everything they need to submit to be considered. It is now in the commissioner's hands or the commissioner's office hands to approve the green light moving forward. But I do know until Tampa Bay and the A's are totally taken care of, that's not going to happen.
Right.
But it looks like Manfred wants two expansion teams in his time in the office. So it bodes well for Montreal. Let me ask you
Montreal, Mexico, you're thinking?
And Mexico. Okay. Mexico, right. Possibly Mexico, which would be brilliant.
Would it be Mexico City or would there
We're
be another?
We're not sure.
Okay.
We're not sure yet. Probably Mexico City. There's flying into Mexico City. Oh, yeah. Okay, my first time in Mexico was this year. I've never been to Mexico
before.
Oh,
you're kidding.
No, we have an MLB Academy in Culiacan, and it's fantastic. Great young players there. And the Mexican League is a really strong baseball league. They're professional league. There's guys that stay there and sign pro. They don't sign pro. They don't sign major league contracts or professional MLB contracts to stay in Mexico because they have a summer league and a winter's league, and they make great money down there.
Oh, yeah, and the winter league is a blast.
It is great, and every fan in every single sport needs to go to one of those games to understand how to be a fan and just enjoy a game. My first soul. I'm in Culiacan, my first time in at our Mexican Academy, and the local team is called the Tomatoers. Tomatoers.
Tamales?
It's Tomatoers or something. Anyway.
Okay. They've got great names.
They are in the playoffs for the Caribbean World Series, and it is like the third round. I can't remember who they were playing, but we went to the game, and I'm going, what is going on here? There's mascots dancing on the field while play is going on. The bat boy is running out and standing on the edge of the field. But the crowd is wild. It was the most fun I've ever had at a ball game ever.
Love it.
Oh, my gosh. I'll post some video. Actually, I will post some video.
I love it.
After this show. Fantastic.
I've seen so many games in winter league baseball in Mexico. It's a different world. There's bands playing. Nuts. It's crazy.
It is so much fun. So much fun. And great for the game, too. Yeah. So that expansion could happen. But, Al, you being the Expos expert, let's just go back to, why did the fans leave? Let's just reframe this.
Okay.
Because we know they had a attendance record, I believe, going into that final very tragic season.
Right.
I guess.
So two things happened. Number one, the Expos, the Blue Jays got their two World Series. The Expos were about to get their World Series when they pulled the spigot.
Yeah.
And so that leaves a real bad taste in the mouth. And then, and people forget about this, but the Expos for most of the time that they were in existence were owned by the Bronfman family. Pretty old money, pretty conservative, but they were stable. What happened was after the Bronfmans left, the ownership became quite it ended up being the Florida ownership, but it became quite unstable and quite irrational. And much like the Ottawa Senators now, we're having a bit of an experience with an owner who maybe doesn't necessarily betray that he has their best interests in mind. The Expos fan base was dealing with an owner who was pretty open about the fact that he didn't think it was a very good market, and he ended up basically trading it for the Florida Marlins. And that's what happened. So they became orphans before the team left, and that betrayal. Like Major League Baseball can do whatever they want. It's not like it's a democracy, but there was some betrayal there, and there was some bitterness there by the fans.
And the fans never came back.
Yep. But it was killed. It wasn't that the fans decided not to go because the game was bad. The relationship was soured.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's too bad. Hopefully, baseball returns to Montreal. It would be fantastic. Hey, we have to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, it's the Low Tide Crush World Series picks after this.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Crush Performance. Today, a special two-hour Low Tide Crush opening day baseball extravaganza. Baseball is back. And Al, I'm not going to lie to you, I've been sleeping better since opening day. Why is this?
Well, because you're exhausted from watching all the great plays. Do you watch, I like to watch the complete game and then I'll watch the highlights.
Yeah.
But for me, one of the great things about baseball is at the end of the day, where you watch all the highlights. And I know what a home run looks like. I just want to see it again, right?
Yeah.
And the early days, there have been like the San Francisco opening day. I mean, against that to me, I want to know what's surprising. And there are some really surprising moments.
Yeah, there are. And we're only three games in for sure. And I think, honestly, I'm sleeping better because of the highlights. Yeah. I was talking to my wife about it the other day. I I love the baseball highlights in the sports packages, the coverage. And I'm not going to lie to you, the game in 30 is the best thing since sliced bread.
The reason the game in 30 is great is because it, even if you watch the game, it reminds you of what happened, you know, and as an adult learner, I need that.
I get it. Well, hey, our text question of the day, Al, was what is the top storyline for the 2018 season? Whether it's players, teams, might be the storyline. I wanted to get this one by you. And I don't know if we have any texts worthy of reading in there, but we're going to be giving away two Marmot passes and a $50 gift certificate to Deluxe Burger. If you want to write in what your top storyline is or thing to watch this year, let us know. But Al, I wanted to get your impressions on the pace of play moves. Baseball has historically been so traditional, but we're seeing some changes.
Well, I'm an old, like, I don't even like the DH. So that's where I'm coming from, right? I don't like change in baseball, but I don't get the fuss over changing it from 3 hours and 15 minutes to 3 hours. If I'm there, like, I've gone to Major League Baseball games and I, you know, I have a beer after before the game, I have a beer after the third and the seventh. And, you know, if it went extra innings, I'd probably have another beer. Right. But there's a pace that ever it goes at. And when I go to a baseball game, I've already invested my afternoon or my evening. I know it's going to be a long time. It's not like soccer that's 2 hours, but and, you know, and I'll be honest, over many years, my wife has been pretty upset at baseball as a sport, but I don't see how you get it to 2 hours. It's a 3.5 hour sport.
Yeah, no, 2 hours is unrealistic for sure. And, you know, some they're talking about limiting the mound visits, which I don't think is a great idea.
No.
Because a lot of those mound visits are crucial, especially when it's the catcher pitcher, just getting on the same track. The pitching coach coming out to just calm a pitcher down when he's in trouble. And some of those are very strategic visits for nothing else. And hey, what are you going to eat tonight after the game?
And I don't know, but in the world of watching baseball over my many years, when you go out to calm a pitcher down, often that's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Everything gets settled down, gets back to the basics, starts thinking about the things that are important again. And I don't think it's a good idea to make a team give up that.
Right. I'm with you. Yeah. It's going to take away from the game more than it gives back, I think. What do you think about the pace of play clock in the minor leagues? They're trying it out. So they're talking about a 20-second clock, 15-second clock with no runners on, 20 seconds with runners on the base.
I don't like anything that is the structure of the game isn't, then it becomes, that's the toy, right? Like that's the discipline. So it doesn't even matter what kind. I want the pitcher to give the best effort on the pitch that he and the catcher have chosen on that particular. That's what baseball is.
Yeah.
You know, when you have Stanton up, you better be right. You know, you absolutely, and you better have saved all your energy for those seven pitches to get Stanton out, because he'll make you look like a fool. You don't have to do that with a shortstop who's batting ninth, but the big time hitters, you have to really, really bear down and concentrate on. These players who play in the major leagues have been trained over many years to, they don't worry about a clock. It's never been part of their existence. You're really changing the game and you're making it unfair because that's a new degree of difficulty they've never faced.
So an analogy I heard earlier this week when it came to the pace of play was putting a shot clock on golfers in the PGA. How would that go down?
Yeah.
You can't.
Well, and some will do well, but some will do terribly.
Right.
Right. And that's not why we, you know, somebody will have employed a pitcher for $20 million a year and the pitch clock will bother him. Well, that's a bit of an investment, right? Yep. And the degree of difficulty is already there in baseball. You have to get the guy out.
And that tempo of the game is sometimes a strategic manipulation on a pitcher's behalf or a batter. Well, stepping out of that batter's box is a strategic move sometimes. It can give you a huge advantage.
Whitey Herzog said, the beauty of baseball is you never can run out the clock. You've got to give the other man 27 outs just like you get. And that, to me, it's the time is what you've invested. It's not supposed to be a race.
Yeah.
And maybe that's old fashioned and maybe baseball, you know, ruins television schedules, but I don't care.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Hey, Al, just to revisit, I wanted to revisit this one last thing. If you had one player you were going to watch this year, just out of pure interest, I know we talked about players to watch already, but your number one player to watch again, as we get to our playoff predictions and World Series predictions here.
Bryce Harper. Yeah. I just love watching him at the plate. I think he's an exciting player. I think he's also as good as he is. I think there's another gear there and we might see it this year. And I can't wait for it.
Yeah. Of all the players in the league right now, Trout and Aaron Judge and, you know, Kevin Pillar, again, I got to go back to this story. This is one of my favorite things that happened last year. We're watching a Blue Jays game and I'm in an airport somewhere and I'm grumpy and tired and jet lagged, and I'm watching the Blue Jays game was on this TV. I can't even remember what airport it was or what country I was in, and the Blue Jays are playing, and Kevin Pillar just made one of his great diving plays, which he made already, maybe his best one this year already. There was a sign in the outfield that says, "Hey, look, I'm not saying Kevin Pillar is Superman. I'm just saying we haven't seen them together." Right? So I love it. It's just great. Kevin Pillar is one of my favorite players to watch. But up in Cleveland, they have a middle infielder that's just so much fun to watch. And Lindor is just one of the players I just really enjoyed watching into the playoffs last year, just the way he carries himself in the pressure, but a great young player that I think is one of those guys who's recalibrating the infield.
Yeah. Don't you find that when you're introduced to a player, like when he's young and you're just introduced to him, that's when you sort of fall in love with the game all over again, because you realize the possibilities for that player.
Yeah.
And you say, what are his limitations? Well, I don't know. And then you get to find out.
Yeah.
And that's the, you know, this year there'll be a bunch more great young players that we'll see, but that's what to me is great about baseball, is there's a bunch of new players we're about to enjoy for the first time.
Yeah, it's great. And it's a great time in baseball for sure. I think a lot of people would cry for a little more parity in the league. Mm-hmm. Though when we talk to the executives, Al, the GMs, assistant GMs, the special assistants to the GMs, and even some of the managers and coaches in the league, they love it the way it is. They love it when these big payroll teams, Boston being the number one payroll this year, I think Yankees dropped to 7, Dodgers roll in. So whether you're the second lower half payroll team, or you're a big payroll team, when these big guys roll into town, your seats are full.
Oh yeah.
And that makes the game kind of exciting too. So there's an upside.
Sure. And it should be difficult. The Houston Astros showed us last year how difficult it is. They started in like 1961 and they won it last year, and they had great players and great teams for a long, long time. And they got close, but they never got it until a year ago. And if you're in another town, like Pittsburgh hasn't won since what, 79, or Baltimore or wherever, you know, that's the dream. And you can watch, like, I think fans like to watch a team build, and I think they're willing to do it as long as they feel like the team has the right idea.
Al, I think your Nationals are one of the 7 teams without a franchise World Series.
Yes.
And it's been, I think, 94 years. If you go back to before they were with, does that sound right to you? Before they were with the, before they made the change from the Expos. Like, I can't remember how long it is, but they're one of the teams that doesn't. So, you know, watching Washington come together and maybe make a charge this year has been exciting. I think there's a lot of teams to watch, but if we were to look at organizations this year, your team to watch before your World Series prediction.
Oh, the team that is going to be close to the World Series, or
well,
just
let's we got a minute left here, so we're going to have to sort of push it. So your team to watch, and then your World Series prediction.
The team to watch is the Nationals, because I watch them a lot. And then my World Series is going to be, and I'm going to do it again, I'm going to say the Astros over the Dodgers in 7.
Okay. Well, okay. This isn't going to be as exciting as I thought it was going to be, but my team to watch this year is the Yankees. I have too many friends that are Yankee fans that we trash talk like crazy, but I do believe the Yankees are a legitimate triple threat this year in terms of their bullpen, their starting rotation, and their lineup. And I got this strong, ugly, dark feeling inside. They're not done when it comes to the deadline. So my team to watch is the Yankees. My World Series picks, again, Dodgers and Houston. I think it goes the other way this year.
Okay.
Dodgers are going to get it, because I don't think they're done either.
Yeah. I enjoyed this. We have to do more baseball talk.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you for sticking around, because I know this is an extra hour out of your weekend. I really appreciate it. I've been looking forward to this show for so long. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Connor for coming in and wrapping up the show for us. And I really enjoyed it, Al. The baseball season is underway.
And because we did this broadcast, the Jays won. So we brought karma to Toronto.
There you go, Toronto fans. We're all about you guys. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance. Stay out of trouble till then.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Friend of the show, Kevin Sullivan.
And the only other piece of memorabilia I have hanging from wrestling is a picture of we were in East Boston. I took Andre to eat at a friend of mine's restaurant, and he's holding me and my brother up, one in each hand. And I weighed about 235 at the time. My brother weighed 250. And he's holding us like babies, but Andre had the day off the next day. I took him up to New Hampshire, which was a 90-mile ride each way, and he went into show and tell for my nephews.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, and they were in the fourth grade at the time. And can you imagine those kids when Andre walked in? You know, he you know how huge he was, but can you imagine a fourth grader looking at Andre?
That's like the coolest thing I've ever heard, quite frankly.
Yeah, he was so good to me.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.